Welcome to Voices of NCAJ. We're talking to members of the North Carolina Advocates for Justice about what it means to be a trial lawyer, what it takes to be great at the practice of law, and how being a part of NCAJ enriches their lives and careers. Produced and powered by Law Pods.
Welcome, everyone, to Voices of NCAJ, the podcast for the North Carolina Advocates for Justice. I am Amber Nimix, your host and Director of External Affairs for NCAJ. Before we get started, I'd like to thank today's episode sponsor, Advocate Capital. Advocate is passionate about helping plaintiffs' attorneys get better results for clients, mainly through their AdvoTrack case expense funding service. It allows firms to track case expenses and recover borrowing costs, which makes the net cost of borrowing zero on cases they win. My guest today is Rosa Antunez Boatwright, a personal injury attorney at the law offices of James Scott Farron and the new chair of NCAJ's Hispanic Latino Legal Issues Division for 2025-26. Boatwright has been a member of NCAJ since 2016. She has held a number of leadership positions in the organization and is an NCAJ Next Leadership Program Fellow. Rosa, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for being on.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Rosa, let's start at the beginning. You have a very interesting life story. You spent your early years in Honduras. Tell us what your childhood was like.
I think that's a very broad question, but if I were to summarize it, I would say idyllic. I grew up in the capital, so that's surrounded by mountains, certainly a lot of nature around, but also, obviously, it's a poor country, so a lot of volunteer opportunities. And grew up with the same 60 kids in my grade since kindergarten. So very close-knit community as well. So yeah, and my dad had a candy factory, so that's every kid's dream. So because of that, I would definitely say idyllic. I was one of the fortunate ones in the country to not be under the poverty line. So I used that to certainly help as much as I could.
And did you have an extended family there in the capital when you were growing up?
So my mom was from the capital. My dad was from the coast, which you can certainly tell you're close to the equator when you go to the coast of Honduras. Very, very hot. So it's one of my least favorite things to do. But he had family there. My mom had family and surrounding the capital. So there were certainly a lot of cousins, uncles, aunts, etc.
And so you went to school in Honduras and lived there until your junior year, right? Of high school?
Yes, junior year of high school. I was 16 when we moved to the United States.
And what precipitated your move?
Well, essentially, the candy factory went out of business. It was really affected by Hurricane Mitch, which happened in 1998. So we struggled for a couple of years and then realized there was nothing else we could do. So we moved up here December of 2000.
That must have been a cataclysmic event for your family.
Absolutely. It was definitely an uprooting of everything I've ever known. Obviously, I had come to the United States as a visitor several times during my childhood. So I had seen, wasn't completely a culture shock, but to actually live here versus being a tourist was different. And it was, you know, pack one bag and that's your whole life into one bag and going from having a nice home with help living in with you to having no bed, you know, no place to stay was definitely, hard.
So you finished your high school education in the States?
In Florida, yes.
So what was it like? What that experience of moving from an idyllic childhood in Honduras to finishing high school in Florida as someone who packed one bag?
So I will say that, like in Honduras, at least in the school that I was in, the culture was very much everybody wanted to get good grades. Everybody wanted to do their best. And that was very different than what I encountered here. Everybody in the school was enrolled in, you know, the International Baccalaureate program versus here. It was 8 people in my class in the whole school were in that program. So it was very culturally different, but there were also, you know, because it's a bigger school, additional opportunities like dance classes and things like that that we didn't have in Honduras. So that was definitely interesting. And, you know, it was something that I've always seen in movies growing up, and to experience it was shocking because it was great, right? I was actually living in a movie, but it was also like, oh, girls really do fight with each other. And that was something that ever happened in Honduras.
Wow. So what did you do after you graduated? Where were you in Florida?
So I was in the Tampa Bay area, a little town called Bradenton, which is right next to Sarasota, which I think is more famous. Yeah, it was a small community that sort of took us in there. We found a Hispanic church that really helped us out with finding a place to live, getting us settled in. So we were very fortunate to have found that.
Wow. So I think about a senior in high school and like all the decisions that you have to make and all the like transitions that just the average person is going through. Couple that with a complete like move to a different country and a different lifestyle. And that must have been like a real time of turmoil in your life. How did you figure out what you were going to do next?
So honestly, there wasn't much of a choice. My whole life, it was known that, you know, high school, then college. But unfortunately, that was not an option because my immigration status was just not allowing me to get into college, not even community college. And that's something that I found out the hard way. Actually, I had sent my application in, gotten the acceptance letter, tried out for the cheerleading team and made it into my community college. And then they sent the notification that, oh, wait, never mind. We can't actually enroll you. And, you know, there's really no other option. And that was sort of my first run in with the legal field was, you know, an immigration attorney basically said you have no options except to like, you know, get married.
And how did you eventually get onto the path to higher education? Where did you go?
So eventually, you know, I did get married. So that finally allowed me to get a job, to get into community college again. And because when you're a married student, you don't have, you know, the normal undergrad life. You have to basically live at home with your husband and go to school whenever you can. And obviously with that comes bills to pay. So I had to have a full-time job to be able to make ends meet.
And you studied psychology as an undergrad?
I did. I initially went to Vance Granville Community College, got my associates there. And most of those classes were online and worked at a local Durham law firm while I was doing that. And then, you know, from the start, I basically said, my goal is to go to college. I will do online classes as much as I can, but eventually it'll have to be in person. And they were great. They worked with me and were able to accommodate me when I was able to transfer to UNC to finish my undergrad in psychology.
And what drew you to psychology?
My mom was a psychologist. So, you know, that's sort of been something that she's talked about my whole life and used it. And the brain is always something that has fascinated me, you know, how much we can do with our brain, what it's capable of doing, the good and the bad. And so that was always fascinating to me. And so actually being able to learn about that and do it was great. And my long-term goal was to be a doctorate in psychology. But by the time I finished undergrad, I was 30. So that did not seem like a good option anymore.
And so what drew you towards a legal career?
So my first job ever was in the medical field, actually, and being a medical secretary. And then after that, working for a chiropractor, a local firm in Durham actually, you know, was looking for somebody with some medical background to hire them as a paralegal. And I thought, you know, I'm never going to get this job. There's absolutely no way, because it was just a paralegal position is what the ad said. And, you know, I have zero experience in the legal field, but I sort of wanted to switch into that if possible, rather than be in the medical field. And they were kind enough to believe in me and give me that opportunity and help me grow as much as I could.
So how did you meld those two interests, the psychology and your interest in the legal field? How did you find that psychology informed your, I guess, your pursuit of the legal profession?
So any litigator will know that jury trials are a lot about psychology. And so is really dealing with, you know, with clients every day and adjusters, I would say. So it's a lot about having that empathy, really connecting and understanding with what people are going through, as well as, you know, maybe if somebody's not having a good call and they're rude to you on the phone, you know, you have that understanding of, well, maybe this is what is going on with them, and have that better understanding and empathy for people. And I think that's helped me also as a litigator to connect with juries and be able to sort of anticipate, you know, what they might be thinking.
And so how did you make the move from paralegal to law school?
So as a paralegal, I was always afraid of the responsibility of being an attorney. And I looked at the attorneys I worked for and I told myself, I am never going to be a lawyer. This is so much on their shoulders. I don't know if I can bear that burden. But as it got closer to having to decide what to do after undergrad, because I knew that I couldn't have a career with just a psychology degree, like I had to do something else. And, you know, and looking at the options for graduate school, this is what made most sense. It's what I had experience in. I had connections in. By then, I had been a paralegal for about 10 years. So it really made sense for me to just keep going on that path. And I think that once I was able to pass the LSAT and all of those other exams that, you know, you need to take, and then I was offered a scholarship at NCCU, that really made me feel like, okay, I think I can do this. And really helped me, you know, give myself that confidence to be able to tackle law school.
And how did you decide on the practice area?
So again, it just made sense to stay in personal injury because that's the two paralegal positions I had were both with personal injury law firms. So that initial law firm that gave me a chance, that was the Hunt Law Firm in Durham. And then the law firm that stuck with me through undergrad was Hyland and Padilla in Durham. Both of them really focus on personal injury. And so again, I had that experience. I had those connections. I knew a lot of the defense attorneys, the mediators, and they knew me. And so, and again, I was familiar with the work and it drew me as far as not only do I already have my foot in the door, but also I'm familiar with the work. I'm comfortable with helping clients in their time of need. And it's something that is not only gives me satisfaction as far as helping people that are injured, but also is profitable, which obviously is important to me because I have a daughter, but aging parents that as immigrants have zero retirement options. So, you know, that's sort of on us to help them through that.
Mm-hmm. So your parents are still in Florida?
They are, yes.
So was there a single case or a moment in your career after you had become a lawyer where you knew this was the one, I know for sure that I've done the right thing and I'm on the right path?
Was there a certain case you said? I'm sorry.
Yeah, a certain case or a moment in a case where you were like, okay, this is the thing for me. I know I've chosen correctly.
So one particular case stands out, and I think that everybody that worked on this case will say the same thing. It was a gentleman who unfortunately, you know, lost his life and had a partner that he was living with and a few kids together. And unfortunately, North Carolina law, because they were not legally married, meant she couldn't inherit, kids couldn't inherit. And so they were really, you know, without a husband, without a father. And he was the only source of income in their family. And so we were able to, you know, get them a recovery by convincing a judge that they were married under common law in South Carolina. And therefore, you know, that same law would apply in North Carolina. And somehow that got approved and we were able to get them the recovery that they needed to be able to move on with their lives or at least be able to recover and not, you know, completely be at a loss with their dead relative.
That's awesome. And how did you first become involved at NCAJ?
So I was in law school and I don't remember how I made the connection with NCAJ, but I do remember that as a law school student, NCAJ has this great program where they sort of connect mentors with the new law school students that sign up. I fortunately got Jason Taylor, and he really took an under his wing, introduced me to everybody he knew at that first convention I went to, and really believed in me from the start without, you know, just, I was just a law school student. And he really backed me up on that and took me under his wing. So since then, he's really encouraged me to be in the organization. Also, you know, once I started at James Scott Farron, I met Annabelle Rosa, and she also really encouraged me to, be a part of the organization and participate, especially in the Hispanic Latino affairs.
You are also involved in the, or you're a fellow of the NEXT leadership program as well, right? And what was that experience like for you?
So that was last year, and that was an incredible experience where I got to meet other young lawyers with the same sort of drive for leadership. And we were fortunate enough to have Jess Averhart, I think is how you say her last name, as that leader to really, you know, not only show us how to portray ourselves in the world, but also to look introspectively so that we can be the best people we can be in our personal lives as well. And with that, have the ability to then go on and serve the best we can in our work environments. So it was sort of an overhaul of the person, not just work environment. And that was really impressive and definitely something that I would recommend for young lawyers to do and to get into that program if they can.
Awesome. And now you are the chair of NCAJ's Hispanic Latino Legal Issues Division this year. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really excited about it. It's a division that I've been a part of for years and, you know, I've had different sorts of roles, but this was sort of a surprise role. But I'm very honored because this division is open to everybody, I will say, and not just Hispanic attorneys, but everybody that represents and wants to help the Hispanic clientele. And we have a lot of different attorneys in the division, from immigration attorneys, workers' comp attorneys, personal injury, employment law. And it's a great opportunity for all of us to come together and really talk about all the different legal issues that we're all facing and how to best help our client. So we can come together with all of our different knowledge and resources to be able to really make a difference and help each other be the best counselors we can be for our clients.
Yeah, I don't think everyone understands that the division is not just for Hispanic attorneys, but it is for anybody who is helping, who has clients or issues in cases involving Hispanic issues. So that's great that we're always trying to do a better job of getting that message out there and letting people know that what the division is for. Do you have like specific goals or ways that you are hoping to further the mission of the division this year as chair?
Absolutely. So this year, you know, we expect it to be challenging. We expect it to be busy in terms of all the ongoing legislation, different government changes, even local legislation in North Carolina that's impending. It really is something that we need to be on our toes about and, again, discussing with each other so we can all be well-informed and be able to not only advocate for our clients, but also just be able to talk to them about it with knowledge and be able to give them the proper advice that they need to, even if it's just a referral. If we communicate with each other, then we know who to refer them to. And even that is valuable in itself. So my hope is to be able to do several roundtables this year. And I think it's, you know, to be able to be on our toes on an as needed basis, you know, if we need to get together next week because of something that happened this week, you know, we need to be able to do that and have those open discussions so that everybody can share what their experiences are with how this is impacting our clients and brainstorm to how to make it as best as we can.
Great. Well, I know that the division will be in terrific hands with you in charge. So thank you very much for taking that role on this year. It will be, I'm sure, busy with everything that's going on.
Unfortunately, yes. But we're here for it. We're ready to work.
Well, Rosa, thank you so much for being on the Voices of NCAJ podcast. It's been great to have you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Before we go, I'd like to thank our Circle of Leadership program sponsors, Abrams and Abrams, Henson First, the Law Offices of James Scott Farron, the Law Offices of John McCabe, Whitley Law Firm, Brown, Moore & Associates, Edwards Kirby, Johnson & Groninger, DeMaio Law Offices, the Law Offices of Wallace & Graham, Horton & Mendez Injury Attorneys, Kuntz & Smith, the Law Offices of Jason E. Taylor, Sumwalt Group Workers' Comp and Trial Lawyers, and Orndorff Law Firm. These firms are supporting NCAJ's mission as founding members of the Circle of Leadership. Find out how your firm can join the Circle of Leadership at ncaj.com/circle. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Voices of NCAJ. For more information on the North Carolina Advocates for Justice and how to join or support NCAJ, please visit our website at www.ncaj.com.